Welcome to the Currency.News podcast. It pays to be curious.
AI and data are transforming the customer experience. It's an issue that many business leaders are currently grappling with as the pace of transformation accelerates and the demands of customers change. And the stakes are high. How companies adapt to this unfolding technological revolution will determine their future success or failure. So how can companies develop the capacity to deliver change? What sort of technology do they need? And how can they bring key stakeholders from the board to the staff to customers with them on this journey? These are some of the questions we're asking in today's podcast in association with EY Ireland. And to help answer them, I'm delighted to be joined by not one, not two, but three EY partners. Richard Hepworth is lead partner for innovation, design and customer transformation with EY in Ireland. Brona Reardon is a partner with AI and data with EY. And Killian Leonovitz is a partner with technology consulting EY Ireland. You're all very welcome here today.
Thanks, Ian.
Thank you.
It's a whistle-stop tour of a lot of big things. But Richard, I'm going to start with you because I think we're seeing more and more investment by companies and businesses in the idea of customer transformation. Why are they doing it?
That's a great question. One of the reasons why they're doing it is customers' expectations are radically changing. They're getting used to using technology, whether it's on their phone or in their home, in new and innovative ways. And that is driving businesses to need to change, to maintain their relevancy in the marketplace, and to be competitive and stand out from all the other brands that they're competing against. It was interesting in a recent survey, around about 28% of customers were now prepared to give their data across to get a more hyper-personalised customer experience. So this trend is only going to increase.
Now, we've spoken before, Richard, we did an article for The Currency and it's available on the EY website as well. And you used a phrase there that stuck with me. It's this idea of the front office, because I think it really sets the framework, the groundwork for what we're talking about. So when you talk about the front office, you're not talking about just the receptionist, it's a different meaning.
Oh, absolutely. It's every touch point between a customer and organisation. It can start in digital and social. You can go to contact centres. It will go to face-to-face contact in the home and also in the store itself. So it covers every single aspect of that customer experience.
And that relationship with the front office is changing on both sides.
Absolutely. Not only is the customer expectations changing, but also the way that employees deliver that service is changing. And lots of organisations are using Gen AI to re-transform the employee experience so the employees can actually focus on things that really matter to customers.
Yeah, and that's something we will come back to in a few minutes, that people journey. Killian,
yeah.
I just want to bring you in there because Richard does a great job of talking about the concepts. But behind the concept is the technology.
The spine. Yeah.
It is the spine. And I, for one, am often frightened when I hear about technology because you're like, I don't understand it. I'm going to make a mistake. I'm going to spend a load of money going in the wrong direction. So I suppose your job primarily is to make sure that the technology requirements align with the business needs and it's brought in the right way.
Exactly. So I lead the technology transformation team at EY and our job is effectively as enterprise architects. And the enterprise architect's job is to define the organization from the bridge of the gap between the business and technology. So what is it that you need to deliver from a technology perspective to enable the business? And enabling the business comes back to what are the customer outcomes we want to achieve? What are the profitability requirements we want to achieve? All that type of stuff. And what we invariably see is that there's a huge disconnect. The disconnect is between the silos, the fragmented systems, and typically an underinvestment in technology over the generations, not just in the last few years.
So it goes, and this is a point I think many companies might be able to understand, because most, you know, it's like this current versus capital expenditure. We all know we have to pay salaries, but sometimes we push the capital, the longer term stuff aside.
Correct.
So you're trying to deal with that as well.
So we're trying to deal with that, but also I suppose added to that complexity is the fact that the technology delivery models are moving away from capital expenditure towards OPEX, particularly with cloud models and as cloud technology is deployed. So I would say that's the first big challenge is aligning the business to the technology and making sure that silo, those fragmented systems are kind of broken down. The second thing we would see huge investment at the moment in is technologies on the cognitive spectrum. So everything from artificial intelligence right back to the basics of robotic process automation, machine learning, and trying to get that balance right in terms of achieving the efficiencies that people need. And that in itself has challenges because sometimes you know, robots, we've seen them deployed in kind of siloed places, not connected to the business. And that goes to the next fundamental point, is which a lot of the organizations we deal with are not managing the KPIs and the return on investment. So that's actually hindering investment, further investment in the future. And what we would say is you need to make sure that they're lined up. I think the other piece then is just the people readiness for technology change, so that when a system is implemented, that it actually can be properly adopted. So there's a whole spectrum and plethora of things that we can get into talking about, Ian, but I think for me the key thing is that fundamental connect between the business and technology, because if it's not there, how can you have the right spine from day one? You can't.
And is there an issue, Killian, that people can overcomplicate it as opposed to looking at the basics and the real impact for what it can do for their business?
100%. We see so much convoluted technology delivery. It's complex, it's deep, and effectively what it's creating is long-term risk, because the more complexity in the systems, the harder it is to manage, the harder it is to keep safe. So what we would say is if you can get a single spine, single focus, core platform delivery, you know, you're in a better place altogether.
And you mentioned also the return on investment. Yeah. I think that's a key point we're drilling into. Mm. Is it hard to measure to make sure that you're getting that return on investment, or how should companies go about that process when they're starting off on the journey? And I suppose I think your advice from what you're saying at the start, you need to be simple, you need to understand where you're going. I suppose the response is the same. We need to understand what those outcomes are.
It is, and I would say from what we've seen with a lot of clients, they would be really good at measuring investment, you know, the first 3, 4, 5, 6 months. After that, kind of apathy, you know, hits in, or, you know, they're just not as diligent in measuring that. It needs to be continuous. It needs to be built into the system from day one. So it can be done. It's easily achievable with the right metrics, with the right approach and focus. But I suppose sometimes it falls off the radar, and I think that's the bigger challenge.
Yeah. Brona, I'll come to you, and apologies for leaving you until last. But I think data, when it comes to AI, is probably the most important thing. You can have the technology, but the technology doesn't work unless you have the data to feed it.
Yes.
So you might just talk to us about the role of data in the process of transformation.
Sure. I think many have identified data as a super fuel for analytics and AI, and it's really important that you have really good quality data that's well governed within your system. I think there's a couple of key elements when it comes to the role of data that's worthwhile identifying at the beginning. First of all, first-party data, which is your own customer data, is really important if you're able to access that, because you have accurate and relevant insights on your consumer's behaviour, their patterns, their trends, their insights, their spending profile as well. So if you're able to understand first-party data on your own customers, that can really enhance your productivity and your insights about your customers.
So you have that better understanding of your customers. So these are the real case studies of how it works.
Exactly.
Again, I'm going back to Richard's point on that front office, but it's that interaction, whether it's the chatbot popping up or it's someone on the phone.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess that's what's really going to fuel your analytics, your AI, your predictive insights. And as Richard said, your personalization is something maybe we'll talk about later. That'll really help you deliver a much more effective and impactful personalization journey for your customers as well. And not just for businesses, but for customers themselves, because customers expect, as Richard says, a much more personalized and interactive experience. So if you can understand that you know how they behave and what it is they want before they know they want it, you're going to increase customer satisfaction, engagement, loyalty, for example. Another element is around data quality. I know that's a really well understood area as well.
Well, I'm not sure. It's well understood for you, but a lot of companies, and you know, I'm thinking like there's a lot of companies out there who aren't on ISAC or, you know, mightn't have reporting requirements on a monthly basis. It's like data is something that you just cross your fingers, like the television license. You hope you don't get the bill, you know?
True, actually. And I guess maybe just to explain that a little bit as well, then, around what we mean by data quality. So at a very high level, it could be accurate data, so that, you know, you've got, say, the right, for example, if you take age, maybe historically, or the right information. So do you have accurate information? Is it timely? Is it up to date? Does it consist of the right fields? In line with that, I guess we have to be very clear and mindful about regulation and making sure that we're only storing the information that you need for the right purpose as well. So it's very important that we govern our data very well, so you know who owns it, who can access it, and that any data that you have is stored for the right purpose as well.
And you might just talk about the real use cases for what you can use that data for.
Yeah, I think maybe worthwhile starting in some of the areas that most people will be aware of. So chatbots, like you said, are very common now, virtual assistants. And I guess taking that as an example, what we might find is that each of those opportunities or examples will continue to advance. So now we may have been used to chatbots and virtual assistants, but they're getting more sophisticated and much more personalized as well. So what you might do for some of those in the past is automate a lot of your frequently asked questions, for example, and you'll free up your customer service staff to engage with a customer on more complex issues as well. So that's one area.
Yeah, Killian, just on that, just drawing from that, so we're talking about the importance of data, and if you haven't got it, I mean, with the best will in the world, you can have the best technology, but without the data to feed it, you've got a problem.
Well, there's one side is the data, the other is the plumbing. So what are the pipes? What's the pipe work to actually get the data flowing? And we see that all the time. You know,
just drill into that. Sorry, to expand the metaphor.
Yeah. So I suppose like the ultimate is, right, so there's data and there's having data stores and then there's utilising the data, but also how are you connecting, how are you joining that data, how are you managing that data, how are you keeping it relevant? That's where we're seeing things, like you will have heard of concepts years ago like data warehouses, data lakes, data reservoirs. They're becoming more and more of a thing now, more important. Why? Because data is ultimately one of your commercial differentiators. And if it's not a differentiator today, it needs to be tomorrow. It's as simple as that. And I think the point that is probably most relevant for me, and I know Brona and I and Richard have discussed this, it's the contextual use of that data. So it's great having data and it's great creating insights, but if it's not meaningful to me as a consumer, it's useless. I'll give you an example. One of the well-known comparison sites that we would all use before we book a holiday, what really frustrates me with them is I've booked the holiday, I've gone on the holiday, and they're still sending me information about the locations and the hotels I should be looking at before, you know, about going to that place.
Even
after you've been, and it's just like, you know, you've missed the point and now you're just noise and you're annoying me. So I think that's really important in terms of getting that contextual, meaningful data right and being able to draw that out. And one of the big developments we've seen as part of AI is definitely sentiment analysis in terms of how sentiment is coming through in voice technology in particular. And we're seeing that now in some of the contact centres we're deploying, even with the government departments here in Ireland, in terms of we can see people getting frustrated, we can see people getting angry, they're using keywords that are using that, and we can make interjections then to improve the customer experience on the basis of the language that's being used. And that's really, really important.
And I can just slightly build on that. Not only can we do the sentiment analysis, but now we can do agent support as well to actually prompt and support the agents through some of the most difficult conversations they probably have with a citizen or a customer. So this is a two-way type of transaction, supporting the customers and the sentiment, but also supporting the employee taking the call.
Yeah. So it's more rounded.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And some of these inquiries, they're getting more and more complex, because what we're also finding is customers can actually self-serve the basic things. So what's then surfacing within organisations are much more complex types of inquiries. So that's why the agent support element is actually another important component of the whole customer experience.
Bron, I just want to round out what we were discussing there, because two things. Number one, just building on Killian's point, just the emerging trends in that AI and data piece. What are you seeing? What's coming next? Because I said at the start, you know, this is accelerating and the pace of change is so fast. But when it comes to AI and data, it's just frighteningly fast for a lot of people. It's changing so much. So what are you seeing? And then also you might talk to me about how customer expectations are evolving and the role AI might be able to help people in terms of keeping up.
Sure. I guess addressing the first question, first of all, as well, I think it's a really great question. And I think over the last couple of years, we've seen the introduction of generative AI and now it's agentic AI, for example. But taking that back, when we're talking to our customers as well, we see three distinct segments potentially of partners that we work with. One of which is, how do I get started on this journey? Because how can you demystify this whole area? For me, it sounds very complex. So one, how do I get started? Two, once you're started, how do I accelerate that journey? And then three, how do I scale? So I suppose our role is very important in that we demystify the whole area and help a customer and a partner understand where they can begin with as well. The other thing to share, I suppose, is that while these new techniques are relatively new, this space has been around for quite some time. So whether it was data mining, data science, artificial intelligence, machine learning, and now it's the next iteration of large language models, generative AI, agentic AI. And I guess our job really is to help a customer understand which of these techniques and methodologies are best suited to their needs. So in many ways, it's about, one, how do you get started? The key very much is, and Killian had mentioned this as well. It's about understanding how you align with your business objectives and your key priorities as an organization. So what are your goals? What are your objectives? And our role then is to help our partners understand what analytics techniques will enable them to answer their business questions. So number one, how do you get started? Align it with business objectives and start small and pick one high value use case.
Richard, I just want to ask a question because it's easy to look back and we're talking high level stuff. Yeah. We'll get into some specifics in a little while. And it's easy to say, oh, that's only for the big companies. It's only for the multinationals or the transnationals or, you know, the big companies with the thousands of employees or the hundreds.
Yeah.
You're nodding, you're disagreeing with me already. Because you know where I'm going with that.
I do. And if you look at the startups, you know, the people that are really transforming and leading the way into this area, it tends to be the small organisations that tend to be more fleet of foot. Yeah, so what we're finding is that these technologies are available to all. And actually, all organisations need to adopt them in different guises as quickly as possible. So I do not believe this is just a situation just for the bigger organisations. There is that complexity, though, for the legacy type of organisations like government bodies and other things. There is actually a bit of the plumbing that Killian was talking about needing to be sorted out to get through to the accessibility of the data, start applying it properly. But this is applicable to all types of organisations right across all sectors.
Yeah, and I think just on that, I think it's also a huge opportunity for the smaller companies to leapfrog. I was giving Richard and Brona the example. I was in Singapore last week as part of a holiday, and my wife and I were walking down through Raffles Place, which is in the centre of the CBD. I was met by two holograms from the smaller challenger banks in the region, asking me what I wanted to do for my wealth management plans and how I could open an account with them live in Raffles Place. It was cutting edge technology, but the key is smaller organization, more agile, more effective, being able to get out there, leapfrogging with new technology to create, take a space in the marketplace. And that's what we could clearly see here in Ireland. We could see that, you know, particularly in, you know, different industries where we do have challenges competing against the traditional big boys.
And do you see that, Brona? Because obviously the smaller companies, they don't come with that sort of the history, the legacy of all of the data on files. And you ask them for it and they say, well, I need to go out to a storage compound outside of Dublin or whatever.
Yeah, I think every organisation has an ability to use their strengths to best advantage. So as Killian says, smaller organisations may not have the historical legacy of, say, on-premise technologies. They may be able to create new AI-first ventures as well, which gives them an opportunity to leapfrog as well. There's a couple of other areas I see this too. So I have a couple of other roles as well, one of which I sit on the AI Advisory Council. And as part of the National AI Strategy for Ireland, there's a specific focus for SMEs as well, helping the nation understand how we can support those organisations move forward in data analytics and AI as well. So there's certainly a lot of support out there for that and a key recognition that they need additional supports. The other things for SMEs as well, I guess some of the challenges we have is one, how do I access talent? How do I access capability? How do I get started? So certainly there's an additional need there for SMEs to have maybe a pathway forward for how do they access lower cost capability as well. All being and saying that, actually, some of the challenges, however, we do see are very similar, whether it's an SME or a large multinational. There's challenges with data, access to data, data quality, data governance, data silos, and what's the right technology and tools to be able to deliver that. But again, even with that, it's what's the right strategy. So what's the right use case? And some of those challenges we see across different types of organisations.
I think there's the right strategy, but there's also the option for organisations that if they do want to dip their toe, there are pathways for them. So, for example, the majority of our clients will be, you know, on Microsoft technology in some form or another, whether it's Outlook, whatever it is, right? They can apply for, you know, co-pilot licenses or whatever it is. So there is that pathway there. But I think, Brona, I think the most important thing is select a really good use case.
Absolutely.
To identify your first one. Align it with the business, align it with technology. A small working group, you know, Skunk Works in the background. Just get it going, test it, try it, measure the ROI on it and go from there. Because, as I say, the technologies, they want to sell you AI. It's as simple as that, right? Let's be honest.
Yeah. You know? I just want to move the conversation on slightly. I said at the start, it's a journey. Mm. It's a continuous journey. But a key part of that, I think, is bringing people with you on the journey, whatever about your customers who you're wanting to keep on side or your shareholders, but it's your staff. Because this can be quite daunting, I think, Richard.
Absolutely. And it's probably the most critical part of any transformation program is keeping your people on board and making sure they're adopting the new ways of working. So actually at the top of this conversation, Kinney was talking about the measurements. And one of the key measurements of success of these programs is people adopting new ways of working and making sure that you're measuring it and supporting the people through this change as well. It is a bit daunting. People are a bit concerned about this type of technology. Mm. But actually giving the support and the training to use these tools effectively, it's very liberating. I mean, when I actually talk to my team about the use of AI in our day-to-day work, they actually use it and find it saves them time and effort and improves the quality of their output all the time. I think all people want to actually adopt it in that fashion.
Mm. And from your own sense, Gillian, you're there dealing with the plumbing and the technology, but just to try and have that sort of buy-in. What's your advice to people who are kind of going on this journey?
So as Richard said, like, there's a piece here which is around, you know, empowering people and enabling them, you know, with new skills, training, development, all that type of stuff. There's also a piece as well which is around new roles. So as part of this change, and particularly the consumption model of technology, we see new skills coming to the fore. One I would say that is really important in terms of that bridging between the business and the technology is the job of the role of the product owner. So within the organization, if you have a platform, for example, case management or, you know, a dedicated system, who's the product owner, what's it doing for the business and how are you developing that product for you? The second thing I would see being very important at the moment is in relation to the whole cloud financial operations. So cloud FinOps, we would call it. Who is there managing the consumption, making sure that the licenses are kept up to date? Because believe me, you get that wrong, you're going to rack up a big bill and you really need to manage that as well.
I would agree. I think it's nearly one of the most fundamental elements of success. I think this, as you said, as well as a fast-paced and fast-changing area when it comes to artificial intelligence. So it's important that even as citizens that we're up to speed as it pertains to how we need to use artificial intelligence, for example. Mm. So upskilling is important, reskilling is important, and helping partner with your with everybody in the organisation every step along the way is really important. So what KPIs are they... are they impacted for, and what do they need to do in terms of learning and development?
And I'll come to KPIs in a moment, because I think, you know, it's so crucial. But just that sort of cultural shift, and it can be a cultural shift because, you know, people are reading all of the headlines about AI is going to take my job. You know, I know that's a very blunt statement to make, but it resonates with people that they think they're going to be done out of work by a computer.
But if you look at it in reality, what AI is really doing is taking all the administration tasks away and letting people focus on things that really matter. So in lots of ways, the tools are there to enable the person to do their job in different ways, but in probably better ways. And taking, you know, that first draft of an email or a letter back out to the customer, that will be done by AI. And then the actual employee can focus on the things that really matter, getting that letter crafted. Nobody likes doing that first draft. And I think that's the way that we'll try and actually liberate what people do and get the people of organisations focusing on things that really matter to them and to customers.
And Kelly, what are the pitfalls here that people should avoid?
I think the first one is lack of skills. That's obviously right. That goes without saying. I think the second is they bite off more than they can chew. You know, they just focus on, you know, big implementations, big bang, you know, going large. They just don't get the basics right. They don't get the fundamentals. I think the second or the third thing is they probably underestimate the challenges they will face within their own existing architecture and landscapes and how difficult it's going to be. So sometimes you need to pay back the onion to actually go and, you know, to that position where you can restart and reform again. They probably be the big pitfalls. But I mean, as Brona said, the one that's going to catch you out more than anything is if you don't get the data security and privacy correct, because that's the one that's going to land you up with the fines. And the other one is make sure it's secure, because we know now we live in a geopolitical world which is causing all sorts of disruption from a cyber perspective.
You might just come in on that, because obviously, yeah, more cyber issues, Brona, and that's obviously a very big impact, but there's also a huge potential embarrassment impact for a company if they're victims of a hack.
Absolutely. And I think it's, again, one of the foundations of moving towards transformation. Get your data right, have your technology right that you need to deliver that, and make sure you've got really tight security and cybersecurity policies in place. So compliance and regulation and risk management are really important elements.
Now, in terms of the KPIs, and I'll throw this open to any of you, because it's a big question, and the metrics that one uses, what are the key things that people should be really looking at in a granular detail to try and see what is success?
So I suppose like the number one would be a net promoter score, right? So are you likely to promote? I think the second is within a lot of the customer technologies that we would deploy is what are the abandon rates, you know, in terms of making a purchase or, you know, transacting through a process. That's probably another one. I think obviously then there's total cost of ownership from a technology perspective in terms of how much the system's costing to run, deploy and maintain. I don't know, they'd be the big three for me.
And then the commercial ones, like, you know, for more commercial organisations, it's things like customer numbers, retention, cross-selling, revenue. And for citizens and public services, it's all about the usage of the actual app or channels to making sure that you're supporting your citizens in the most appropriate ways possible.
Okay, so finally, I'm delighted I have three partners in a room around the table at the one time. I'm not sure what the billable hours for this is, but I might as well take advantage of it while you're here. If you were to give one piece of advice, and maybe two pieces of advice, but it's up to you, for companies and business leaders embarking on this process, when you step back from it all, what would that advice be?
So Ian, I'm going to just give you two bits of advice. The first is, why are there three partners sat around this table? And what we're finding is that to deliver these types of programs, it's a multidisciplined type of event. That's why the three of us work very closely together to make sure we pinpoint the right use cases, to make sure we get the technology right, get the data analytics right. And I suppose this is actually really challenging organizations' business models, and it's also changing the way that we go to market as well. So that's one of the key things. The second one I would say is it's all about, if dare I say, that design, being very clear about what the new customer experiences are going to be, what's the new employee experience are going to be, and then hanging off the KPIs with which to measure that change and being relentless about making that change. In all, we talk about technology, but this is people change.
I suppose for me, the two things would be, obviously, going back to my technology transformation role and putting that hat on, would be understanding your enterprise architecture. What's the business capability model? What are the levels of maturity you have against that? The second is, obviously, educate yourself. And if I was to give one piece of advice in terms of books that I've read over the years, Jan Karlsson, who used to be the CEO of Scandinavian Airlines back in the day, he wrote a great book, Moments That Matter, or Moments of Truth. Read that book. I think it's really good. It's as relevant today as it was back then.
Okay, finally, Brona.
Yeah, for me, it would be about getting started and start small. Align with your business objectives and create a use case that's going to deliver value. Scale gradually. Very much put data at the centre of all of this. Make sure that your data is as where you need it, quality governance. And finally, put people and the mind and the machine, really. Make sure that you have people at the centre of the ethos of everything.
Okay, well, Brona Reardon, Killian Leonovitz and Richard Hepworth, thank you very much for joining me here today.
No problem at all. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Currency.News podcast. It pays to be curious.